This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
What's going on, people? Welcome to Pain Points, a Tainus Hoopers podcast, brought to you as always by SB Nation Network. I am Jake Painting. You can catch me on Twitter at Jake Painting, JakePaynting. You can find all of the great writers over at Tainus Hoopers, all their written work at TainusHoopers.com. Today, I'm joined, as usual, by my friend and Tainus Hoopers brethren, Jack Borman. What's going on, man?
Doing well, man. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Same old stuff. Today, we're going to do some draft stuff. I know we've kind of been avoiding the draft a little bit just because it seems like it's going to be forever before we actually get to watch the draft and watch prospects enter Minnesota. But we will get into a bit today. We're just going to go through a few pairings, a few this or that prospects and kind of choose between which prospect we'd rather out of two and speak about that for a little bit. So we may as well just jump straight into it. Like we just said off air, we're probably going to be here for a while because we both love to talk draft stuff. But we'll jump straight into it with the top of the draft, two best point guards in the draft by consensus, and that's LaMelo Ball or Killian Hayes. Who would you rather, Jack? And that we're going from a Minnesota point of view, so obviously there's a difference between fit and overall best player, but we're kind of going to break it down as a who would rather.
Yeah, so in a few of these, I'll have players who, in my rough, kind of first rough draft at a board, that'll be someone that might be higher on my board, but lower in terms of fit for the Timberwolves, just because obviously, you know, Timberwolves have different fits than other teams do. So between LaMelo Ball and Killian Hayes, I would definitely rather have Killian Hayes, and it's not particularly close. Yeah. And the reason why I think that is just because Killian Hayes is a really, really good pick and roll defender, as well as a pick and roll playmaker. And, you know, as good as LaMelo Ball is in terms of his vision, his basketball IQ and passing, I just don't think he's quite as comfortable playing in a really PNR centric system like the Timberwolves are going to have, especially with guys like D'Angelo Russell and Karl Towns. And especially too, since LaMelo, I just don't think he was really, he didn't show a ton of great shooting in the NBL. And I think a lot of that had to do with shot selection and the fact that, you know, like in games that weren't particularly close, he just kind of started doing his own thing that he would do in high school, which is just kind of pulling up from all over the place and not really caring. Yeah. But I just think that because Killian Hayes is such a smart on the ball player, he could function really, really well alongside D'Angelo Russell with D'Lo playing at the two. And just the fact that Killian is really good isolation player and can create his own shot, I think is important as well. And you can never really have enough guys like that on your team. And so I think that Killian would slide in and start at the one from day one for me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I had Hayes as well. I'm lower than Ball on Ball than most. I'd still have him in my top three, probably at three, but Hayes might be my number one prospect, really. I just finished writing the piece for him over at Tainus Hoopers, so I watched a ton of games of him. I got a few games sent to me off a friend, so that really helped, and I really love Hayes. Like you said, I think he's a very underrated defender off the ball as well. Really smart team defender, can make plays in passing lanes and kind of follow his man around. Very, very aware, very smart as a team defender. And then, yeah, like you said, good on the ball, good pick and roll defender, really good pick and roll playmaker, really nice at those skip passes to the corners, and as well as just the spoon feeding the big man on rolls. Both of those, I think, in that pick and roll heavy system will really help. I'm not sure I'd have him as a starter from day one, but I'd definitely have him playing pretty big minutes, 25 to 30 minutes a game. I think there might be a little bit of a redundancy with D'Angelo Russell, just because they're both very left-hand dominant, both kind of similar players, I guess. I think Hayes, like Russell, is a very good shot creator, very good at those step-backs and crossover jumpers, loves to get into the mid-range, not a very good finisher around the rim. So I think they're kind of similar players, which I guess, you know, can go either way. You either can plug him in and play the exact same kind of scheme as you do with Russell, or you can, or he can kind of be redundant and get in Russell's way by doing the same thing. But I lean towards the former. I think they'd be very good together. I think Hayes could back him up really well. And yeah, overall, I just think Hayes is probably, I think, the better prospect than Ball, much higher floor, in my opinion. And yep. I think, yeah, like you said, the things that Ball struggles with are really the things that Minnesota value the most, and that's three-point shooting, getting to the rim, being able to help the defense that already struggles so much. So, yeah, it's a pretty obvious one for me.
Yeah, I just think that LaMelo really kind of furthers a lot of the problems that the Timberwolves currently have, in the sense that it's guys who are really inconsistent shooters, and some nights they could be on, some nights they could be off, can be really turnover prone. Even in the half court, I know Dane was talking about in his latest pod with Wilder Berg, about the fact that LaMelo really would turn the ball over a lot, just because he was really trying to make kind of adventurous
home run pass. Time.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, I do think that that's true to a certain extent, but I would like to see LaMelo take care of the ball a lot more, and kind of have that more front of mind, especially if you'd be playing in Minnesota, just because I think that you already have guys like Josh Okogie, Malik Beasley, and even Kat to a certain extent, and D'Lo, I guess, too, all guys that could be turnover prone. And if while we're at it, let's just throw Jared Culver in there too, especially when he's going to the rim and gets it stripped. So I really think that taking care of the ball is going to be really important for whomever is running the point. And I just don't really think that LaMelo fits with exactly the type of scheme Minnesota wants to play out there. And the other point that I wanted to make about Killian, kind of the distinction between him and D'Lo, is that I think that D'Lo is a really dynamic off-the-ball player, whereas I don't think that Killian Hayes is quite there. And one of the weaknesses that I had listed for Killian was just that his catch-and-shoot numbers weren't that good, and he just doesn't really look, you know, he doesn't have a lot of experience playing off the ball. And that's totally understandable, just because, you know, he's been one of those guys that has always had the ball in his hands because he's always been the best option for a team at the point. But in terms of just catch and shoot numbers, he only shot 33% in catch and shoot, with an effective field goal percentage of 50%. So that's a relatively small sample size, but that's compared to his off the dribble numbers, where he's shooting 45% and has an effective field goal percentage of 58.1%, which puts him in the 88th percentile as opposed to 41st in catch and shoot. So it's really interesting that a player who struggled just shooting in general 2 years ago has now become a much better off the dribble shooter as a point guard than a catch and shoot player. But I think that, like you said, his floor is just sky high because he has so many marketable skills that will absolutely translate to the NBA from day one. And even if you wanted to have him run the second unit, I think he'd be great at that, because then it would still allow you to play a 2-point guard lineup if J-Mac was back. Because we've outlined how good those two were together last year. But I just think that if the Timberwolves really want to get the most out of D'Angelo Russell, they got to use him on the ball and off the ball. And if you're looking at guys who could potentially slide next to D'Lo and play the one, I think Killian Hayes is at the top of that list for me.
I agree with that. And I think that the catch and shoot numbers kind of work to my point where I think that he would be better served immediately running the second unit, because then he can kind of have the ball in his hands at all times.
And then, like you said, he can
come in and play next to D'Lo and guard twos and still get a little bit of that on-ball work or off-ball work. You know, you get D'Lo off the ball, keep Hayes on the ball, but it kind of, as much as Russell is a really good off-the-ball player, he's still a very ball-dominant point guard, you know, by nature. So you want Russell to have the ball in his hands for as much as he can. And that means, I think, bring Hayes off the bench, give him still 25 to 30 minutes a night, either backing up Russell and sharing the floor with him, and then that you kind of get the best of both worlds. Both guys kind of get a bit of time off the ball, get a bit of time on the ball, and you bank on Hayes being able to guard twos when he's on the floor with Russell.
Oh, I think he could pretty easily.
Yeah.
What type of wingspan does he have? He's got...
I think it's six foot nine from memory.
Let me see if I have it.
He's quite big too. I see a lot of
I have 6'8" written down, so 6'8", 6'9" right in there.
Yeah, and I see a lot of differing in the weight for him. Like I've seen like at 185 to 215, but he looks pretty NBA ready for me. He's played over, I think, 70 professional games, you know, and he's been playing as a professional since he was 16, 17.
So playing in the Euro Cup too is important, because Euro Cup is probably the second best league in Europe beside the Euro League.
Yeah, and they're guys that'll stomp on your throat to earn their paycheck. You know what I mean? Like they're not you know, small dudes.
Right.
They're big dudes who are going to set bone crunching screens. Like, and then he's dealt with that for 2-3 years.
And the other thing that I want to mention too is he's been a better defensive player than offensive player during his time overseas, which I think is important to note that'll translate well. And I don't think the defense is quite as physical in the NBA as it is overseas. So hopefully the offensive game will be a little bit easier for him, as well as the defense. And the other thing I was just going to mention too, you said that he'd still play 25 to 30 minutes a game. And I think that's important too, because we all know that we can kind of count D'Lo in for about 65-ish games out of an 82 game campaign. And I really think that it would just allow D'Lo to kind of go balls to the wall for the 25 to 30 that he's out there, which I think would be better for his health and probably better for his long-term effectiveness in Minnesota as well. So
yeah, for sure. So we'll jump into the next one. So Anthony Edwards or Onyeka Okongwu, both, again, top-tier prospects.
Yeah, so this one I think is tough, because I think there's a very clear path for both prospects to really be really good in Minnesota, and there are two guys right now that I'm kind of grappling with who I want to have round out my top three, kind of in what order I want these two guys to be in. But for the sake of the Timberwolves, looking at the Timberwolves' needs, I'm going to go with Onyeka Okongwu here. And that's just because I think that Onyeka Okongwu provides so many things that would be just immediately deployable in Minnesota, from the sense that he's an incredible off-ball defender, in the sense that he's really, really good at reading the defense and seeing the entire floor and just knowing where to be. And he knows his body extremely well, in the sense that he knows how to lay in the weeds in order to put himself in the best position to make a play on the ball at the rim or kind of go catch a pass over the top to a rolling big. And just kind of cause havoc all over the floor on defense. He's incredibly versatile defensively. He can guard 1 through 5 pretty easily. Sometimes he's a little slow going side to side if he isn't in the right position, but I'm not worried about that. I think that'll kind of fix it, or he'll fix that at the next level. His roll gravity, I know you've outlined it in articles before, is fantastic. He has the best hands of anybody in this draft at the rim.
Yeah.
Which I think is really important for a PNR guy, kind of a rim-running guy. And then the two other things that I had here was tremendous offensive rebounder, and he's really good around the rim and in post-offense.
Yeah, so I agree, I agree with all those points, but I chose Edwards.
Okay.
I'm higher on Edwards, I think, than you and probably most guys. I'd only just moved Hayes above Edwards on my rough board. But Edwards, I think the reason why I didn't go with Okongwu is just the the rigidity of the system that they've shown so far. Obviously, that could change, right. but I'm kind of banking on Minnesota really playing that you know, one guard, three wings, one big, and then also the very strict drop scheme. And I think that is not it's not giving enough benefit to Okongwu or playing to his strengths as much as it should by the drop scheme. He's just a really, really good hedger. The way he hedges,
yeah, and he's recovers. So athletic to a point where he can recover and
yeah, that's probably my favorite kind of skill set of his, is the way he gets out onto guards, you know, bothers them for that 1 second, allows his guard to get back into the pick and roll defense, and then can get back to his big man really quickly and kind of shut down both avenues of a pick and roll. And I don't think Minnesota would let him play like that, because they've just shown that they're going to play a drop scheme at all times, or they're going to switch 1 through 4. And I think he's a center in the league, Okongwu. I think he can obviously play the four. Like you said, he can guard multiple positions, but I think he's probably best used as a center in a hedging kind of system, which is, I guess, the reason just why I lent towards Edwards, because I do like them both. But I think Edwards, just with a shorter leash, I've spoken about this before, but with a shorter leash than he had in Georgia, a guy who can just spot up for catch and shoots, use that really good shot creation that he has in more limited bursts, and then guard guys, you know, not take the best wing perimeter player at all times, kind of, if you're having with a Josh Okogie. I guess that's kind of different if it's with Malik Beasley, but even then, I think I like him. I think he's one of them players who I think will be better at the next level than he was at college, just because he was in a pretty poor situation for his...
Kind of like a Ben Simmons, in the sense that I think that Ben Simmons was kind of lethargic and apathetic at LSU because he knew, yeah, he was going to be a top five pick. Went to a school that wasn't really going to compete to play in the NCAA tournament. But still just has crazy undeniable talent. And the other, yeah, thing... And I'm not going to argue with you at all with Edwards, just because it was so hard for me to try and determine everything. But I think you're spot on about Okongwu and how his defensive strengths don't really match up with what Minnesota's doing. I think it would kind of be hard to play two separate defenses, in the sense that if Okongwu's on the floor, you're going to play one way, and if Cat's on the floor, you're going to play another way.
And I think Towns needs that really structured environment. If you change too much up, it kind of seems to overwhelm, right, him.
And I can understand that. And part of me wants to see Cat play the four, in the sense that I think that he's a really good perimeter defender for a guy his size. He's incredibly, yeah, agile and quick, and he almost looks more comfortable out there. And I think that might just be because he was a shorter guy for a good chunk of his life and grew a ton in high school. And you kind of see that sometimes too with guys that go through huge growth spurts like that. But I really wish that there was a world in which Cat could play the four and Okongwu could slide in and play the five. But it sounds like that's not something that's going to happen. And it's probably more of an idealistic look, but who knows?
Yeah, I think that's the best option, I think, for Okongwu, is if you're going to bring him in, you play Cat at the four, and then like they do, you kind of switch everything 1 through 4, Cat included now, and then you get Okongwu in as the center. But like I said, even then, I think they'd have to just tweak that system a little bit and allow him to hedge. And I think in general, I like the hedging system better. Even with Towns, I think you're better to let him get out there and move his feet a little bit rather than having to defend, you know, the guard and the big when inevitably, you know, Russell gets picked off in the pick and roll, and then Towns kind of has too much to think about and too much to do, and ends up making the wrong decision.
And would probably end up having to play almost kind of like a free safety role, and I just don't know if he sees the floor well enough defensively to really be able to do that and cover if Okongwu's going to hedge and isn't able to recover in time. I think that there'd be a lot of easy buckets at the rim, but if they were able to string that together and make it work and Cat improved or showed more comfort kind of in that free safety role, I think it'd be really interesting to see. But I'm just, yeah, you kind of talked me out of it. I think that I'm kind of a little less confident in that fit. Uh, but I've always been more of an idealistic thinker when it comes to the draft because you just want to be positive.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So who did we have for the next? Go ahead.
I just wanted to say also with that is I think that, like we said before with Hayes and Ball, I think it's kind of the opposite where we were saying Hayes has the higher floor, so we kind of feel a bit safer taking him, whereas this one's like Okongwu might have the highest floor in the entire draft. I mean, he's going to be a really good rim runner. He's going to be a good rim protector. He can pass a little bit out of pick and roll. He can, you know, defend the pick and roll in multiple ways. So I think no matter what, he's going to be a pretty reliable NBA player, whereas Edwards has that real star potential. And I'm not sure, I guess I'm sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, because I said I'd rather Hayes with the higher floor. But when I'm splitting hairs between Edwards and Okongwu, I kind of came back to the fact that if Edwards hits, you know, most of his potential, he's going to be a really dynamic player, especially offensively.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a different thing than the Andrew Wiggins situation.
Yeah, same.
Just because I think that Anthony Edwards has much, and this goes back to the time that I've seen him play in high school, but I think he's really got more of a killer instinct in him, and he's spent a lot of time going toe-to-toe with guys that are really, really good individual players, and he's shown the ability to show up in those games, play really well, shut other opposing star players down, and rise to the occasion. And sometimes with Andrew, you just don't see that fire. And I think Edwards has it. And if he was able to light that, and Minnesota was able to kind of, like you said, put him in a role where he can really focus more on his strengths and less on being the best player on the floor, I think that would work really well for him.
I think it's just a lot of people make that Andrew Wiggins comparison, and I definitely see
where they're drawing the lines.
Yeah, and I think the thing that stands out to me is that two of Wiggins's biggest kind of deficiencies are the fact that he was never really strong enough to compete for 100% of the game, and he kind of never put on much muscle, and it's not like he was weak, but and he could get to the rim, but he was kind of always a bit slight of frame, and he also always had trouble with his ball handling, and always got the ball stripped, or eventually, you know, he'd start off the season with a tighter handle, and then it would kind of get worse and worse as the season progresses. And I think there are two things where Edwards is really good at. Like, he's very, very strong already, and I'd wager that he's going to get stronger. And then he's just a really good ball handler for a guy who's, you know, 6'5", 6'6". He's got the ball on a string at times, really can string together multiple moves and create space for himself in a lot of different ways. So they're the two things I'd use to dispel the kind of Wiggins comparison, I think.
Yeah, 100%. I think that Edwards' shot profile, in the sense of the shot-making capacity and capability he has, is so high. And I know he doesn't do it all the time, but and doesn't convert and make shots at a high rate all the time, but he's shown flashes of being able to do it. And I think the fact that he'll have other guys that can make plays around him will go a long way in helping him be able to kind of create an island and find his groove. So I'm excited to see it. And ultimately, I think if the Wolves did have the number one pick and you made me put money on it, I would put all my money on that pick being Anthony Edwards.
Yeah. So we'll get into the third pairing. So this one's a tough one for me, but James Wiseman or Obi Toppin?
Yeah, this one was actually really easy for me, and I don't think it's particularly close. So I'm actually a lot higher on James Wiseman than I think a lot of people are. And I think that people, I don't know, maybe it's just that people are looking harder at what Wiseman can't do versus what he can do.
The Towns effect.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there's a very clear path to James Wiseman becoming a borderline unstoppable superstar in the NBA, in the sense that the frame that he has and his athleticism is absolutely off the charts. He's 7'1", 235 with a 7'6 wingspan. He has incredibly light feet. He's a freak in transition. He destroys people on the glass. And he's a really strong interior defender. I think that sometimes he can get a little block happy and kind of go block hunting, which I think happens when you've always dominated at the rim for your whole entire life. Yeah. But I think if he can develop more defensive discipline in the NBA and kind of work on his ball handling, I think if he could tighten up his ball handling, he would be able to just blow by bigger defenders that try and guard him on the wing. And a lot of people don't really buy his jump shot or his touch, but I do. I think that his shot form really isn't that far off from being really workable and effective. And he's an incredible finisher around the rim. He just finishes everything in near around the rim, whether he's cutting, whether he's posting up. He's just got really good control of his body around the rim. And that's something that I think with some guy his size will absolutely translate. Excuse me, to the next level. I just really would love to see him play in Minnesota, just because I want to be able to watch him for 82 nights a year, but especially since we didn't really get to see much of him at Memphis. But this pick was more of I just am really down on Obi Toppin. Yeah. I think that Obi Toppin's strengths in college is that I don't really think are going to translate super well to the NBA, just because everybody's way more athletic. And when being athletic is really your only true amazing strength outside of being able to finish around the rim, I think that you run into problems. I think that he has a really high center of gravity in the sense that smaller defenders can kind of push him around in the paint if they have good positioning. I think he's probably the worst defender in the draft.
Yep.
And I don't see how he fits next to Kat or in front of Naz Reid. I would rather have Naz playing out there than Obi Toppin.
Yeah. I'm pretty much in a similar boat to you. I'm definitely lower on Wiseman than you, but I still chose him out of this pairing. It's kind of like a Russian roulette with six bullets in the chamber for me with this one, because I don't really want either of them in Minnesota. So it was a hard choice, because I am fairly, you know, optimistic that Toppin can be a good offensive player in the league. I think he does. I think the athleticism, like you said, is not going to pop as much as it did at the collegiate level, but I still think he's a super athlete for a big guy, and he can also really stroke it from deep. So I think I don't ever think he's going to be like an offensive hub type, you know, Karl Anthony Towns kind of offensive weapon, but I think he could be like a 17 to 18 point scorer a night at some stage. But even then, the defensive issues, especially if it was to be in the situation of Minnesota, are just super concerning to me. And that's where I think Wiseman definitely gets the edge. Obviously, he's got a way higher ceiling than Toppin's, which is admittedly very low, but I still think Wiseman has a lot of work to do as a pick and roll defender, as anything kind of that's not a rim protector. I think he's got a lot of work to do, but he's obviously got the tools to be able to do it, and I don't think you need to do that much kind of mental gymnastics to envision him becoming a pretty decent defender, especially if he's really switched on that end. I know on a podcast with Kyle the other week, I said he kind of reminds me of a Whiteside at times, but I guess all it takes is that, you know, 10 to 20% extra awareness and want to, which I think that Wiseman probably has, you know, to be a really, really good defender rather than a Whiteside. And so for that reason, I'm going Wiseman. I don't really want either of them, just because I don't think either of them fit very well next to Towns, and you're not going to spend a top seven pick on a backup. Like you said, I wouldn't really want, you know, Obi Toppin playing as a backup or Wiseman. If they think they can play him next to Towns, that's a different story. But right now, I'm definitely going Wiseman of the two. I think he's got a much higher defensive potential and can still be a good rim runner, great transition player. Like you said, like, you don't often see guys his size kind of bounding down the court in transition like he does. So, yep. Not very high on either of them in comparison to the consensus, but definitely Wiseman of the two.
Yeah, I think too that, you know, I like Obi Toppin's shot, but I really wonder how that's gonna be at a much higher volume in the NBA.
Yeah.
And who knows? I think, you know, like you said, Obi Toppin could be a 17 or 18 point per game scorer. But I could also see him being like a 7 or 8 per points per game scorer that just kind of struggles to find a groove on offense.
Yeah.
And I think that the floor, just because Wiseman has a crazy good frame, is absolutely massive, and is really dominant inside already. I think that he'll have a much easier time finding success at the NBA, and really just think that he has better foundational skills to potentially become a star. And when you're looking at these two guys, who neither of them really fit super well on Minnesota, I think that you just got to go with the guy who has the higher star potential and can probably make a bigger impact on day one. And for me, that's Wiseman.
Yeah, I was along the same line of thinking. I think that I don't think either of them fit very well, but if you had to make the choice, I think Wiseman's the pretty obvious one there. Even though I know a lot of people have mocked Toppin to Minnesota just because the hole in their starting lineup seems to suggest that they kind need a four. Yeah, I agree. It's kind of like, well, they need a four, we'll just put Toppin there. But that's kind of, as soon as you start to, you know, uncover the actual holes in Minnesota's offense and in their defense, you can see that Toppin's probably not the answer.
Yeah, it's kind of like LaMelo in the sense that, sure, I get the intrigue, I get why people like him, but I just don't think that getting a guy that doesn't solve the immediate problem of can he play defense, adding a guy like that would be very smart.
I think a lot of the mainstream media and kind of draft guys as well see Minnesota as this team that's deep in a rebuild, which obviously, you know, they were second to last in the West this year. So they're obviously not a great team at the moment, but I think the front office doesn't see them as a team that wants to compete in 5 years. They want to compete in this Karl Anthony Towns window before he has a chance to get up and leave. And that's pretty much, you know, next season, the season after, and the one after that. So I don't think you can wait around for, you know, LaMelo Ball or Obi Toppin to work out the kinks in their game over the next 3 years. I think there's definitely an argument where you just need to get a guy. If you're splitting hairs between two guys, you need to get the guy who you think can come in and help you straight away and maximize Towns' window and Russell's.
For sure. Yeah, I completely agree.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, so we'll go on to the next one. Two wings here, Devin Vassell or Isaac Okoro?
You're really killing me here. These are two of my favorite players just because I love watching both of them play. And I've probably seen more of these two guys play than anybody else in the draft.
Yeah, same.
At least going back and watching film from more of a let's watch this guy perspective, just as I watched guys like Tyrell Terry and Anthony Edwards and Cassius Stanley and guys like that. I watched a lot of those, the teams they played for. I watched those games a lot, but wasn't really watching it from more of like a draft lens. But here I went with Devin Vassell here just because I think that Devin Vassell's defensive versatility is really, really impressive for, you know, a guy who wasn't really super involved offensively. And the reason why I say that is because a lot of times guys who kind of have the talent to be really effective offensively but don't have the ball quite as much or don't play make quite as much can tune out on defense. And Vassell obviously was not one of those guys. Always stayed locked in on defense. and just flies around, makes plays all over the floor. He's got absolutely mammoth arms, in the sense that they're just, his wingspan is 6'10", but it looks like it's 7'5". just because he's so skinny, I think. But can switch pretty much 1 through 4, which is what you need. Can kind of get manhandled in the post a little bit by bigger players, but kind of switching down, I think, is more so what Rosas and company are looking for in a potential 3 or 4 guy.
Yeah, for sure.
And the 3-point shooting is there, which is really big. He made a huge jump in terms of how much better of a shooter he became off the dribble from year one to year two. And I think that, you know, being able to translate that to the catch and shoot opportunities from deep, I think would be huge. And I think is something that I definitely buy stock in. But doesn't really have elite burst or athleticism off the dribble, which I think can limit him. But considering the fact that he has really good footwork and has such a high release, kind of reminds me of Kawhi a little bit, especially in handoff situations and kind of curl screen actions. Did a really good job kind of getting to the mid-range and getting to his spot and firing, and kind of with side fadeaways and stuff like that. There are all plays that are really useful for a guy of his size. And, you know, I really wonder if you asked him how much he watches Kawhi Leonard, I'd be interested to hear his answer, because that's kind of the guy who Vassell reminds me of. Obviously a very, very light version, but I think he could be a day one starter with the 3 or the 4. He'd be really fun to watch next to Okogie on defense, just because I think those two would make life a living hell for opposing wings. And I think he's a really good off-ball PNR player on defense, in the sense he's really good at kind of digging and sticking into the lane on the drive, and can also kind of, you know, tag rollers if a big is late getting back, and just is really aware on defense, and a guy that I think there is no better fit for the Minnesota Timberwolves in this draft than Devin Vassell. And I'd feel comfortable drafting him first overall.
Completely agree. You know, probably, you know, people who have followed along with the podcast or with me on Twitter know that I am a huge Devin Vassell fan. I really do think, like you said, that he's the best fit with Minnesota in this draft. A really good 3-point shooter, shot 41% on catch and shoot this year, 38% off the dribble. He's got that one dribble pull up after a pump fake. He's also got, like you said, the side steps and the step backs in the mid range, even a little bit of a post fadeaway here and there. He's just an awesome defender. I don't think I think I'm selling Okoro short a little bit here, because Okoro is another extremely good defender. I mean, I just got finished watching Iowa State versus Auburn, and Tyrese Halliburton had the worst time dealing with Isaac Okoro, and that's a guy who can probably play the 4 in some systems, Okoro, and he's guarding Halliburton, who's, you know, widely renowned as a point guard, albeit a pretty big one. But I think he can guard 1 through 4 very easily, Okoro, and probably on the ball is better than Vassell. But I think off ball team defense is more important than point of attack defense, especially at the three. Yeah, and on this team as well, I think you've got Josh Okogie, who's kind of the opposite. He's kind of more like Okoro, how he really good point of attack defender, and not, you know, the his biggest strength doesn't lie off the ball, whereas Vassell's the opposite. Like you said, he's just really good from the nail, really good rotation defender. He gets a lot of blocks despite being, you know, a shooting guard, small forward, power forward, wherever you want to put him at one of those three spots. But just a really good shot blocker. He's got great hands. Like you said, those 19-foot arms kind of just seem to cover everywhere on the floor, and always seem to get a hand on the ball at the perfect time. In that respect, he reminds me a little bit of Robert Covington, the way Covington kind of could always just swipe down on the ball and seem to never get called for the foul, always just get a hand on the ball and just delay, you know, kind of disrupt the shot just that little bit and make them miss or knock a ball off someone's leg and out of bounds. I just think there's a lot to love about Devin Vassell. I'm not sure if his upside is, you know, star, like all-star, but it's definitely like really, really good. Close. Role player. Yeah. Yeah, like if that shot creation off the dribble goes to another level, which I do think it can, I think, yeah, he's definitely like a borderline all-star at his best and playing on both ends. So it's a really, really good pick for me if they end up getting Vassell.
Yeah, and I think the other important thing to note too is, despite the fact that the Wolves are going to have a top seven pick in this draft, that doesn't mean that you need to get a guy that's going to automatically be a star. I think that there might be no stars, no true stars that come out of this draft. And if you can, select a guy that for 10 years is going to be a really solid star in his role and what you need him to do, then you can mark that down as a really successful draft pick. And I think that both of these guys would be that. I think that these are two guys who are going to have very happy homes for a long time at the next level. And I think that just because of the different skills that he has, specifically the three-point shooting, I think Vassell fits better. But holy hell, man, having Isaac Okoro and Josh Okogie on the floor at the same time playing defense would be... I think if there's basketball heaven, I think that is my version of basketball heaven, is just watching two guys that are crazy athletic, love to roll up the shorts, get in your jock, slap the floor, let them know you're there, and just clamp up on defense, are players that I love watching. And I think that they find ways to really impact the game without needing the ball in their hands a ton on offense or just jacking threes. And Okoro is probably the best cutter in this draft and probably my favorite guy to watch at or above the rim, just because he absolutely annihilates people at the rim, dunks over people, dunks through people, finishes through people. It can just contort his body in absurd ways at the rim to finish through contact. Is a guy that I think is going to be able to do that right away at the NBA level, just because he's so crazy athletic. And I'm actually more of a guy that I think believes in Okoro's shooting touch, just because I think he knows that he really has to get better at that if he wants to be able to play more at the rim, in the sense that he's got to be able to attack closeouts to get to the rim, just because he's not hyper explosive off the bounce, just because he doesn't have a great handle. But if he can tighten up his handle to become a better, or to have a better first step, I think he'd become a force to be reckoned with the ball in his hands offensively, especially if he was going up against a smaller two guard. But yeah, I think Vassell is the play here just because of the things that we've laid out.
Yeah, I think that it's strange with those two, because they're kind of almost similar prospects in one way, because they're kind of this very dynamic defensively, you know, wing who can guard up a spot or down a spot on defense. But then in another way, they're very opposite, where Okoro has really struggled from three this year. I think, just let me pull up the numbers. I think he shot about 24% on catch and shoots. 27% on catch and shoots, 24% sorry, on catch and shoot, 27% off the dribble. Just not a great three-point shooter. Like you said, I think the touch around the rim encourages me that he could end up being a passable shooter at worst, and I think that's all he needs to be to kind of really, you know, make his game shine. But he, like you said, I think he's a really good slasher. When he does get those advantages, like when the defense does close out a bit too hard, or when he does get the pass off the bounce kind of, and he can explode to the rim off two steps, off, you know, one dribble, two dribbles. He's a really good finisher around the rim. 80th percentile in transition, 64% around the rim this season. So, like you said, can contort his body in a load of different ways, finish with both hands, really strong. He can finish over you if you give him the chance as well. So, I really like Okoro. Definitely nothing kind of against him by not picking him, but yeah, Devin Vassell is my favorite player in the draft, so I was always going to pick him. But if either of those guys fall to Minnesota on draft night, I think I'll be a pretty happy man.
Right. And the one thing I just want to note about Okoro is, like, I don't think his shot form is really that far off. I just think it's really light tweaking that needs to go into it, because it's smooth, it's compact, He's not really shooting it from a bad spot. But yeah, I hope to see it happen just because I think he's going to be one of my favorite rookies to watch. But yeah, I don't really envision the Timberwolves picking him solely because they probably don't view him as a guy who can come in and shoot the three right away. And considering you already have Josh Okogie and Jarrett Culver, it probably doesn't make a ton of sense. But he's a guy that I think if you bet on him, you'll be really happy with the results.
Yeah, I think he would definitely add a lot to the defense. But it's one way to kind of, tick off the fan base, especially the more casual kind of fans, by drafting another guy who can't shoot, because they do drive fans crazy at times. Like, I know Okogie does a lot of good things, but, the narrative is always going to be he can't shoot, and Jarrett Culver's the exact same. So
it's not going to get me to say a negative thing about Josh Okogie. I'm sorry, I'm just not doing it.
This is the Josh Okogie stan podcast, always will be, especially after all the good work he did in the community as well this offseason. So we're going to cut the Josh Okogie slander short right now, and we'll jump straight into the next one. So Kyra Lewis or Tyrese Maxey, another two point guards?
I might catch some shade for this, but I don't care. I am starting the Kyra Lewis hive. I want to just make it grow as big as possible and just get mad at anybody that disagrees with me. You look at him, and I think he might have the highest ceiling of anybody in the draft.
Ooh, hot take.
And the reason why I say that is because he might be like the fastest guy I've ever seen at the college level not named Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
He's incredibly explosive from anywhere on the floor. And he's a really, really good finisher at the rim. He has incredible control of his body when he's in the air and trying to navigate around defenders. But sometimes he just goes too fast for his own good. But I think the fact that, it's a guy who is still learning how to most effectively use his body to blow by people, I think that's something that'll definitely work itself out as he plays more minutes. Especially in a more up-tempo style of game at the NBA level. And his catch-and-shoot numbers are absolutely incredible for a point guard who played on the ball a really good amount this year. And hold on, let me just pull it up here super quick. Catch-and-shoot numbers, 41%, 61.9% effective field goal percentage. That was good for 89th percentile in the NCAA this year. And even off the dribble, 35% and 46% effective field goal percentage for the 79th percentile. So he's a very, very capable shooter, and I think the off-dribble shooting and his form when he does so is something that I completely buy and think will only get better at the next level. He's got insane lateral agility, and he's a really smart player on defense. His handle can be kind of loose at times, but again, that's just simple skill development that I think will continue to get better at the NBA level. And the really only two weaknesses I had here were out of control at times and somewhat loose handle. And I think if those are your two weaknesses, I think that those are both very correctable and very easy to be patient with a rookie point guard. And I think he would be a great point guard for the second unit just to really set the tempo and push the pace. I think that playing alongside a guy like Jarrett Culver would be fun for him just because those are two guys that I think like to get out and run and are effective players in transition. But he'd also fit really, really well with D'Angelo Russell. I mean, you think about what Jordan McLaughlin is good at. He's really quick with his first step, can get into the lane, and then can dish out to D'Lo for three or just put pressure on the defense that allows D'Lo to go to work more easily. And I think that he would also fit really, really well with Karl-Anthony Towns in the pick and roll, just because, you get a guy like Cat who has such a wide body that can set really good screens. I think all Kyra Lewis needs is even the slightest of windows to blow by somebody, and get to the rim. And if you give him any bit of space, he's gone. And I think that, too, if you had him as a backup, he would just be dynamic as hell. And there's just no real backup point guard that I think that would be able to stay in front of him. and would just be something that would be really fun to watch. And I could see him averaging 15 points per game off the bench just because he blows by everybody and can make open threes.
And this team, I think there's a lot of really likable role players that come off the bench, but they haven't for a long time had that player that can kind of really lead the second unit. I mean, we both love Jordan McLaughlin and, you know, Jared Culver if he's in the second unit, but having a point guard who can, like you said, set the tempo, give you 10 to 15 a night, hit threes, kind of really be the focal point in a bench unit can really help, because you see those lineups when Towns and Russell and Beasley are all off the floor that kind of just collapse into nothing immediately. And that's not because the role players aren't good role players, but it's because sometimes you really need, yeah, a focal point, a fulcrum offensively to give you that stability. And I think Lewis could definitely be that. I really do agree with you there. Although I did choose Tyrese Maxey because I'm really high on Maxey compared to most. So
they're both really fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think they're both kind of undersized point guards or off-ball kind of guards. Like Lewis is more of an on-ball guard, but I think Maxey played a lot off the ball at Kentucky. He had to compete for touches with Ashton Hagans and Emmanuel Quickley, who are both, I guess, probably even point guards themselves as well. So Maxey, I think the thing that pushes me over the line is a kind of a theme here for the whole podcast, but is the defensive side of the ball with Maxey. He's just a really, really good defender. For a guy who's 6'3", 200 pounds, he just seems to be able to fight through screens really well on the ball, so aware off the ball. He's not really a defensive playmaker. I guess you won't really see him getting a lot of steals or you know, making those big hustle plays, but he just seems to never actually do anything wrong. He ranked in the 83rd percentile overall on defense, which I know can be a bit iffy on synergy, but I think the eye test really backs up those numbers. And then offensively, he's not done. I don't think anyone is kind of playing at the same pace that Tyra Lewis is, but he's still really fast, Maxey.
Yeah.
Really nice first step. Really good finisher around the rim. He does those up and under reverse layups and kind of contort his body around big defenders really well, because he's not athletic enough to finish over or through, you know, the big trees at the rim, but he does a really nice job of going around them. And then he's got a really nice float. I don't think anyone, you know, maybe in the country shot as many floaters as Tyrese Maxey.
Right.
And he converted, 39.1% of the runners according to Synergy, but that's a pretty good number for floaters. I mean, if you look around the NBA, you probably find that no one's converting floaters, you know, above 50%. So it's kind of the 40 to 50 is where you want to be. And he shot 62 of them for the season, which is really a really high number, you know, to a game around that. You don't really see that in college. So I'm pretty high on Maxey. I think he could be that same kind of 15 point scorer off the bench or alongside D'Angelo Russell. I just think that the defense is what pushed me towards his side a little bit more, just because on this team, obviously the big point is defense. The big hole in the team is the ability to capably defend and to lift that defensive rating to a point where that's not, you know, bottom of the league, and then the offense can kind of drag them along. So Maxey's my pick, but only just.
Yeah, and I think too, the thing that kind of makes me iffy about Maxey is that he has point guard size. He's really small for a two guard.
Yeah.
But he can't really make plays on the ball, and he really struggles to create off the dribble for himself. And just doesn't really have that many dribble moves from what I saw. Would run into trouble trying to make, you know,
yeah, he definitely
boomer bust passes because he got into tough situations.
Yeah, he definitely relies on that first step and that speed to get to the rim. He doesn't really have many counter moves or like you said, right, moves to get himself open.
Yeah, and I think because of that, I think that it's harder for that to translate to the next level. And I do think he has a really nice shot for him. I don't really understand, outside of just sometimes poor shot selection, why more of his shots didn't go in.
Yeah.
And I think that he'll be a much better shooter in the NBA than he was in college. But I think, you know, if you can get D'Lo to guard a two and have Tyrese Maxey be your point of attack defender, or have that on the bench where, like, Jarrett Culver guards the two and Tyrese Maxey guards the one, but then the roles are reversed on offense, I think you could make that work. But I just don't really see Tyrese Maxey being a great off-ball defender, especially if he's guarding somebody that's bigger than him. Or not off-ball, excuse me, just like wing defender with a guy that's bigger than him, just because I think guys could go through him. But you know, if you find a way to just have him be your point of attack defender, I think that he'd be really, really effective at the next level. It's just the offense is where I differ between him and Kira. I think that Kira's got really translatable speed, as well as moves to be able to get to the rim.
And the passing as well.
Correct. I think that he's further along as a passer, and obviously has spent more time as a primary playmaker. And I think he's got a higher ceiling as a shooter as well.
Yeah.
So for me, it was really the offensive side that sold me, just because I think that Kira, I think he's got to bulk up. The last time I checked, I think he was listed as at 165 pounds, which is pretty small for a point guard, but, you know, get him in an NBA strength and conditioning program and hopefully you see some results there. So it's really just splitting hairs kind of. I think that Kira's the difference between Kira's offense and Tyrese Maxey's offense is big enough for me to a point where I think it's bigger than the gap between the two of them on defense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think like you said, you're splitting hairs, and you kind of, you know, if you're looking for a more dynamic offensive player, you're going to go with Lewis. If you're looking for a guy who you think can probably guard point guards a bit better, you're going to go with Maxey. So, like I said, I think they're both... I think Maxey's top 10 for me. Lewis is probably just outside the top 10. I think you could probably reverse those, you know, on the board, and I still wouldn't scoff at it. So, either way, I'd be pretty happy with either of those two guys. I tweeted out today, and I know Dane Moore has said similar things, that if Minnesota are going to take three bites of the apple in the draft with their first pick, Brooklyn's pick, and a point guard's going to be one. There's just so many point guards in this draft. So that's, you know, I wouldn't hold your breath on Jordan McLaughlin returning with a big role, but I think he'll probably come back as the third stringer at least, or maybe an off-ball guard.
Yeah, and I think that the Timberwolves are going to need three point guards on the roster, just because I think they're really going to want to utilize D'Angelo Russell off the ball. And in order to do that, I don't think that you can only have two point guards. I think you need a third point guard. And I think that the two of those guys, D'Lo and J-Mac, just displayed such synergy offensively last year in the on-off splits with those guys, and some of the ratings and numbers that they put up were absolutely absurd. So I envision that J-Mac will be back and will be the point guard that probably plays more with D'Angelo Russell than whomever else that second point guard might be. If Tyrese is able to really develop more as a playmaker, I think that he would be a really, really fun backup point guard to have. He's not a guy where if we draft him, I would be upset by that at all. But right now, just hold on to your pants here. I have Kira Lewis in at five.
Yeah, I have Maxey at seven. So that might be kind of the same kind of hot take level.
And I'm still not super set on my board from really 8 to 15. It's kind of where I'm just struggling, just because I'm still in the process of watching some more of the guys that could fill out the rest of that. But and Maxey is one of those guys that I want to watch more from a draft lens. I spent a lot of time watching Kentucky games this year, but I wonder if my opinion might change there as we go on in the offseason.
Yeah, I'm the same with Lewis. I think he's one of the guys that I've kind of spent a little bit of time on, but I haven't spent enough time to. That's why I kind of just let you go there, because I don't have, my opinion of him isn't fully informed enough where I feel comfortable kind of making sweeping declarations about him. Move on to now
two guys who I think, like you said, we're just going to let the other one go because we both have.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tyrell Terry or Desmond Bane?
So I just want to preface this by saying that when it comes to these two players, I'm extremely biased here. I went to high school with Ty. He's a good friend of mine, and I've spent a lot of time with him over the last 6-7 years. So I want to get that out of the way. But I am going to go with Ty, and the reason why I'm going to go with Ty is just because I think that Ty is such a dynamic shooter. I think he's probably the second best shooter in the draft, behind Aaron Nesmith. But I think you can make a case that he's better. Yeah, whichever way you want to go, I'm not gonna argue with you on it. But I just think he the shot form that he has is absolutely incredible. And was just an incredibly efficient player, especially when they used him in different ways, coming off screens or in handoff actions. He was just really, really effective. And as a guy that's pretty small, he's like 6'2", 165, still scored really, really effectively in the isolation. I think he's got to improve his handle at the next level, just keep it tighter so he can use more fundamentally sound dribbling to kind of build off that and kind of learn and develop more advanced dribbling moves that he can use to get by guys, because he's not the fastest guy in the world. It doesn't matter if there's a guy right in his face or not. If he's behind the 3-point line and he's got to look at the basket, there's a pretty damn good chance it's going in. 99th percentile in catch and shoot opportunities. He shot 50% in catch and shoot opportunities with an effective field goal percentage of 75%. Most guys who are rim runners don't even have EFGs of 75%. I don't even think Rudy Gobert had an effective field goal percentage of 75%, let alone a point guard who was forced to kind of be the entire offense from his team night to night, because there were a lot of nights where players or his teammates just did not show up and help him out. But the two things that I want to point out about Ty that I think people don't really realize enough are, one, but he's actually a really, really skilled finisher around the rim for a guy his size.
I had that here as well.
Yeah, he showed that he could really contort his body in a bunch of different ways to finish around guys, and he's got an incredible touch around the rim. He shot 62% from around the basket on non-post-ups, and that's 79th percentile in all the NCAA. So that's not even taking into account his size or how small he is in terms of his frame. Just a really skilled finisher and has a really amazing touch around the rim for a guy his size. And the other thing I wanted to point out too is his passing. He's made some really high level passes and has really solid offensive court vision. I think that both of those can improve, but also he's just a freshman this year, and I think that vision is something that I think takes time to develop. If there's guys who at a young age can make high level passes, I think that that's something that's really great to be able to work off of, just because, as you start to develop a better feel for the game, once you get more time in the NBA, the vision is going to come, the IQ is going to come, especially if you're a point guard. I'm just excited to see that part of Ty's game grow along with the ball handling, because once those two things come in, I think that he's going to really be able to put pressure on defenses, regardless of how much weight he does or does not add, just because he's not going to blow by people. So he's going to have to rely on dribbling moves, kind of like what Trae Young does. And on defense, people keep talking about how he's just going to get attacked on defense. Yeah, I think that'll happen. I think that he'll get singled out. But all of his metrics defensively, especially isolation defensively, he was 84th percentile in isolation defense. On a pretty significant sample size, so I think that's kind of going to be the ultimate kind of factor in what determines how far he'll really go in the NBA is how well he can defend with his frame.
Yeah, yeah, I fully agree on all those points, and like you said, I just let you go on that because I know you really know Terry's game, and I have spent a fair bit of time watching him, but I definitely cede to you as the more experienced watcher of Tyrell Terry. Like you said, I think he's a really obviously just a great shooter. I think Terry, Bane, and Naismith are the best three shooters in this class pretty comfortably for me. I honestly think you could almost make an argument for either one of them at number one, which is probably similar to what I'm going to do right now because I went with Desmond Bane. I'm a huge Desmond Bane fan. I think he'll definitely return lottery value at some point if a team can get him, if Minnesota can get him in the second round.
I'd love that.
I think he's comfortably a top 20 prospect for me, probably closer to 15. Just going back to the shots, obviously, the synergy numbers aren't everything, but I thought I'd just kind of compare the two, just in jump shots, I guess, for synergy. Sport up shooting, Bane 91st percentile and Terry 61st percentile. When I seen some of these Tyrell Terry numbers, I thought this almost doesn't match up with the eye test because I never felt like Tyrell Terry wasn't the best shooter on the court at all times. So I'm going to preface it with that. But yeah, so Bane 91st percentile, Terry 61st in spot ups. In all jump shots, that's obviously two-pointers as well included. Bane in the 89th percentile, Terry in the 76th percentile. Catch and shoot, like you said, Terry was 99th percentile, crazy numbers. Bane was 77th. Off the dribble, Bane was 92nd percentile and Terry was 50th. I think that's where the difference between the two is. Like, Bane is a really good pull-up shooter. I think.
Yep.
Definitely, I think, and that's where the difference is with Naismith as well, is Bane is probably, for me, the best pull-up shooter in the draft. And then long twos, which I think in college, more so with players who don't shoot threes very well, but I think long twos are a good thing to examine when it comes to touch and kind of if they can extend their range a bit, but I thought I'd throw it in there anyway. Long twos, Bane 69th percentile, Terry 18th percentile, which, again, I thought was a little bit low because he didn't take too many of them, but I never felt like he couldn't shoot them. But yeah, there's the numbers. The reason I have Bane is because I think the size is the first thing. I mean,
great size.
He's obviously not a point guard, I don't think. I think he's more of a two and maybe even like a small three. He's 6'5", 215. He's built like a brick house. He looks like a little boulder just running around out there. Very good team defender. Again, bit like Tyrese Maxey, I think, how he's not going to make a lot of defensive plays. He's not going to wow you in a Josh Okogie style of defense, but he's just solid as a rock. He knows where his man is. Hard to move him. He knows where his man is. He's very aware. He does get into the passing lanes a little bit. He's not the greatest on the ball because he's not great laterally, but then you look at the synergy numbers again, 99th percentile as an isolation defender. So while I don't think he's that kind of lockdown defender, it clearly shows that he can hold his own on the ball, I think. And then I don't think he's a better passer than Tyrell Terry, but I think he's still really good at the drive and kick. He attacks closeouts really well, draws in the defense and hits the man in the corner or hits the roller in pick and roll. I think he's just like a very solid passer. He's not going to do much wrong. He's not going to bite off more than he can chew. He's just one of them players who's just really high IQ, I think. And then, obviously, on top of that, he just shoots the hell out of the ball and from anywhere, deep range, off the dribble, handoffs, you know, spot up, the whole kit and caboodle. So, Bane, yeah, really, really like Bane. Really like Terry as well. I just think for Minnesota, Bane not only fits a need at the wing and as a shooter, but I think he can kind of hold his own a bit more defensively and play multiple positions, which is obviously very important in Gersan Rose's system.
Yeah, and I think, too, the fact that Desmond Bane, too, can play above the rim in the sense that he's athletic as hell and can dunk on people, and that's something that he's really got going for him, too. I think he's definitely a better athlete than Ty is. Go ahead.
I think Terry's a better finisher around the rim. Sorry, I just had that down here. Terry, like you said, he finishes really well around the rim, but at 6'1", 160, I'm not sure how much he's going to be able to get to the rim unless it's kind of off cuts and stuff. So 100%. I think And Bane isn't a very good finisher around the rim, except, like you said, when he's going over people, but he doesn't have really good burst to get to the rim. He tends to end up with little fadeaway layups and stuff rather than really putting his head down and attacking. But I think at the next level, they might kind of balance out as about even at the rim, just because I'm worried about how much Terry can get there.
Yeah, and I think, too, that's why I talked about the fact that I think Ty really has to tighten his handle just to be able to get by people. I think that he's going to be a guy who's going to be really good at changing pace and using deception and head fakes and shot fakes to really get guys up in the air and get to the rim. And I think that he'll have the skill to be able to do it. Maybe not right away from day one, but again, it's not necessarily just about how good a guy is going to be right away. I think if you were asking both these players to step in right away, I think I would probably rather have Desmond Bane.
And he's 22 compared to exactly, Tyrell Terry's 19.
That was the next thing I was just going to mention, is the fact that the two are very different ages. And I think that if we were talking about Ty 3 years from now, I think that
probably
think
a better player.
Probably be a different conversation.
Yeah.
But again, I think the Wolves are a team that does need help at the point guard spot or kind of the secondary playmaking spot right away. And it's obviously a huge plus if any player is able to do that. I think obviously defense is important as well. And, you know, I think Ty's got really good hands and really good timing, which I think kind of might have boosted his defensive numbers just in terms of how many deflections he had and how many times he poked the ball loose. But I think, you know, everything you said about Bane makes sense from what I've seen of him. I've probably only seen one game of his. I watched a TCU game. I think it was against Baylor. And liked what I saw. So he's definitely a guy that I want to watch more. But like you said, a guy who I would firmly put in the top 20 just because of the skills that he has, I think, are the ones that you're looking for in terms of, frontline skills, being a solid on-ball defender and being a guy who can shoot the hell out of the ball. So two guys that I think you're going to get wildly different results and answers if you ask other people about, but two guys that I'm really excited to see where they go, because I think if they go to the wrong team, they could be flops.
Yeah.
But if they go to the right teams, I think they could both, especially Ty, I think could be really, really, really good.
Thoroughly agree with that. I think Terry especially has got the kind of put him on a bad team or put him on a team that can't use him properly, and it could go south pretty quickly. But you put him, I think, especially on a good team. I mean, Max Carlin and Ben Pfeiffer, they do the Prep to Pro podcast.
Yep, if anyone's listening.
Oh, really good, and probably the best draft podcast out there. But they did the mock draft, and Terry went to Denver, and I think that's just like a perfect fit for him, somewhere where he can play off the ball, which I think he could in Minnesota as well. Like, he can play. Cat's going to still have the ball. I know we talked a lot about these point guards playing off the ball with Russell, but I think we kind of forget that Towns is still going to play in that five-out offense as the guy who can create from the top of the key as well. And that'd give Terry, you know, a lot of handoffs, a lot of like time to cut. He's a much better finisher at the rim. I think if he can cut rather than have to create the driving lane himself. And I still think, Terry, like, I think even now I feel almost closer to Terry than Bane, just because the fit seems really well. I'm still a massive Desmond Bane fan, but around Towns and Russell and leading a second unit in that same way that we said with Kyra Lewis and stuff, I think Terry could be a really dynamic player in Minnesota.
Yeah, and I think it was unfortunate that he was the best player on his Stanford team. Just because it was always him always having to elevate the guys around him.
Yeah.
And I think he is a guy that definitely makes all four other guys on the floor better the second he steps on the floor, just because he's a really, really good playmaker. And if you're open, he's going to find you and deliver you a good pass and put you in a position to score. But I think too, you know, if he runs the second unit, I think he'd just be a lot more comfortable, because I think there would be more trust in the guys that he's playing with to finish. And I think that, you know, there were some games where Ty ended up having to just force stuff, because I think he might have lost trust in his teammates a little bit to finish and to make shots, which is understandable when it can be a one man band sometimes. Yeah. But yeah, I think Denver is a team that I would love, but the two teams that I would really keep an eye on are Philadelphia especially, and Milwaukee as well. Milwaukee is one team, and then the other team I was going to mention, OKC, are three teams that I know are very interested.
Yeah, he'd be really fun in Milwaukee. Really fun.
Yeah,
in Milwaukee.
I think he's going to go mid to late 20s.
He's going to be kind of in that range where Minnesota might be a reach for him at 16, but there's probably no chance he's there at 33.
Oh, yeah. As his friend, I hope he gets drafted as high as possible so he can secure the bag and live his life. But from a basketball perspective, I almost think that, you know, it's not a bad thing if he gets drafted kind of later on in the first round, just because I think... situation, he's one of those guys where I think situation can totally shift his ceiling and floor.
We'll get into the last pair now. So Sadiq Bey or Patrick Williams?
All right, so this one was tough just because I don't really think there's a wrong answer here, just because I think both guys would be admirable fits in the Minnesota system in terms of, you know, what they need and the hole they need to fill at the four. But I went with Patrick Williams here. The reason I went with Patrick Williams is because of his team and off ball defense, I think, is absolutely incredible. He's one of those guys where the second you turn on the game and you start kind of just watching the game generally, he just pops out at you. He's just flying all over the floor, making plays, jumping in passing lanes, you know, blocking shots off the backboard, disrupting shots, tagging guys, and digging in the pick and roll, and recovering to make crazy plays on defense, throwing down ridiculous alley-oops above the rim, just sticks out. And the other thing that I think is really going to be a key development in Patrick Williams' game is his kind of as a secondary creator from the four spot. And the pick and roll will be really huge. He did a really great job of that this year at Florida State, and was something that I didn't really expect from Patrick Williams when I first turned on a couple of games, shifting from watching kind of Devin Vassell to Patrick Williams, was as the ball handler in the pick and roll ranked in the 90th percentile, which was really interesting, and he spent more time as a pick and roll initiator than he did as a roll man in the pick and roll, which is interesting for a guy that's his size and plays kind of the 4/5 spot. Isn't something you see too much in college basketball, but credit Leonard Williams. I mean, he keeps cranking out these long, lanky 6'10" ish guys, and it's just really fun to see. And I hope for Patrick Williams' sake that he'll be able to kind of continue in the mold that Jonathan Isaac has set out. I mean, obviously he's not going to be that level of defender, but can kind of play the same role in the sense that he's just flying around the floor and you feel him every time he's out there. I think he'd be a great fit next to Kat. He's kind of got an inconsistent stroke, but you know, I think that'll develop more. I just don't think he's shot enough. And I think having basketball be your full-time job where you can just get in the gym and shoot, will be huge for him. And I'm confident that three will develop. Really, really key sell points there are his defensive versatility and the potential to be a secondary playmaker on offense.
Yep. I completely agree. I went with Williams as well. I'm pretty comfortably as well for me. I think, like you said, he just contributes in multiple areas. Great weak side defender, really good shot blocker. He's a physical monster for an 18-year-old. I mean, he's the youngest American player in the draft, and he is built like a, you know, mid-20s kind of player. He's pretty slow laterally as a defender on the perimeter, but I think that'll get better as he kind of learns to use, you know, his big body a bit better, because he is really athletic in every other way. He runs the floor like a guard. Like you said, he can play a bit out of pick and roll, so he's very coordinated with his hands and his feet. I think he's pretty inconsistent as a shooter, but I'd be pretty surprised if he's not a passable shooter at the next level at some point, maybe even, you know, an above average 3-point shooter. I really do like his stroke. The passing out of the pick and roll is really good, and the way he kind of sits in the dunker spot as that traditional kind of athletic big. I just think all-around game, Williams might have, I think if he puts it all together, Patrick Williams might have almost the highest potential in the whole draft. I think he kind of gives me a little bit of like Paul Millsap vibes as a, you know, as a high-end kind of
that's
high-end.
That's that's funny. I had the exact same player comp written down.
Yeah, and I don't love player comps, but he just kind of, the way Millsap does everything and kind of isn't absolutely excellent at anything, but just really good at everything.
Yeah, exactly. Just really solid. Go ahead.
I'm not huge on Bay. I was going to say, like, I obviously the 45% from three on good volume. I think his numbers are pretty good defensively, but every time I watch him, I feel underwhelmed with his defense. I think he doesn't fly through screens very well.
Especially switching down.
Yeah, I think he's more of a four at the next level rather than a three, but I don't think he's... I think the archetype of three and D wing is trying to put on him, but I don't buy the defense as much, and I don't buy much else of his game. I mean, he's quite crafty around the rim and a pretty good finisher around the rim, but it's not very bursty. Doesn't really get to the rim very easily. Villanova run a lot of those post-ups for their wings or for their fours and fives, and he got a lot of those, and you can guarantee that he's not going to get pretty much any post-ups at all at the next level, especially not in Minnesota's system. So that pushed me more towards Williams, but either way, I'm very high on Williams. He's a top 12 player for me in this draft.
Yeah, I think I have him in at 10 right now, but that's a malleable opinion. Yeah, and I kind of agree with Bay. I think Bay's offense, I think, will translate to the next level just because he doesn't really blow by people. He just really knows how to use his body and his frame to create leverage and kind of get going downhill and finishing at the rim. He's a really solid finisher. He's kind of what I like to call a synergy superstar.
Yeah.
In the sense that if you look at all of his offensive synergy numbers, they're absolutely out of this world good. But the things that I think will translate the most for him is the fact that he's a great cutter and he's great catching the ball and curling off screens. Just because obviously defenses respect the fact that he's a really good 3-point shooter and has a really quick release, which I think benefits him a ton. But players that are able to kind of weaponize the release, not to shoot threes, but to get going off the dribble and get by guys, is really important, especially for somebody like Bay, who isn't the greatest athlete in the world. So if he can continue to do those things at the NBA level, I think that he'll be solid. But like you said, I doubt his ability to switch down too much. He's not super agile laterally, but again, who knows? NBA strength and conditioning, guys can get faster and stronger and quicker.
Yeah, for sure.
So who knows? I think Sadiq Bey is a guy who probably has a pretty high floor in the sense that I really don't doubt the fact that he'll be a solid role player in his career. But yeah. I also don't think he has that high of a ceiling because I don't really know how much better he'll get just because the athleticism isn't necessarily there. And when that's not all the way there, I guess it's harder to add things to your game. But I do think he'll be better offensively if he can clean up his handle. So
Yep, I agree completely. I think he'll definitely be a good role player. I just think especially in the late lottery or, you know, kind of early teens, if you can swing for potential like you have with Patrick Williams while still being pretty sure that even his floor is at least an energetic, you know, role player. I think that's kind of the difference for me right there.
Yeah, I think his floor is kind of like Jordan Bell, but better offensively.
Yeah,
in the sense
he's
a better shooter, he's got better touch, and he just offers more offensively. You know, Jordan Bell can't really dribble the ball or create offensively, whereas Patrick Williams can. So that's kind of the archetype I had was a Paul Millsap Sap slash Jordan Bell, just because I kind of saw more Patrick or more Paul Millsap offensively, but kind of saw more Jordan Bell defensively.
Which that's
a really fun combination to have. But, but yeah, I think Patrick Williams is probably one of the five or six guys for me in this draft that I think has a path to become an all-star.
Yep, definitely. Like I said, I think he definitely has one of the highest potentials in the draft. With all of these guys, it's pretty unsure whether they can actually hit that potential. But I think even like, you know, 80th percentile of his max potential, it will be a really fun player and a really a guy who really impacts winning as well.
Especially in a low usage thing. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that you heavily rely upon offensively.
No.
But in an ancillary role, just as the four next to Cat, I don't think that there's a better fit in this draft outside of maybe Devin Vassell. I see Vassell more as a three personally, so I guess that's why I don't think it's Vassell. But if you want to make Vassell play the four, it'd probably be Vassell. But I think the Wolves are going to end up trading the 16th pick anyways, or the 15th pick. Hopefully, Brooklyn can hang on to it. But if they keep it, I wouldn't be surprised if they keep it specifically to try and draft a guy like Patrick Williams.
Yep. I completely agree. I think, we've spoke about trades a ton on this pod, but if they do, I think, you know, this is obviously not what we're here to talk about, but I think right now, Vassell, Williams, and Bane at you know, say 3 to 7, 16, and then 33, that would be my perfect draft, I think.
I agree. I think that would be a lights out draft. I think I'd maybe want to go with Cassius Stanley at 33 over Bane.
Yeah, I know. That's your man.
But we can talk about that at a later time. But just to recap, going back at the start, so for LaMelo Ball and Killian Hayes, we both had Killian.
Yep.
Edwards and Okongwu. You had Edwards, and I had Okongwu.
Yeah.
But I am so malleable on that. I think I might might almost go Edwards at this point now, but we'll stick to our original. So you had Edwards, I had Okongwu. For Wiseman and Toppin, we both went Wiseman, right?
Yep.
And then we both went Vassell over Isaac Okoro. I went with Kira Lewis, and then you went with Tyrese Maxey in the speedster matchup there. and then we also split on Tyrell Terry and Desmond Bane, and then both went Patrick Williams. I kind of hope that I'm kind of interested to see what everybody that's listening thinks.
Send me and Jack, you know, your suggestions or your answers to the questions, because I'm really, really intrigued to see what people think about those pairs as well.
Yeah, we'll have to put polls out for each one.
Yeah.
To see what comes back, but yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Like we said off air, I think we'll probably come back and do a part two at some stage as the draft nears, because there's still a ton of prospects that we want to watch and that we want to talk about. I had trouble leaving out a few guys, but I thought we might be here, you know, all day. We're already at an hour and a half almost, so that'll probably be enough for today. But yeah, we'll definitely get back for a part two.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the Wolves are for sure going to keep their second round pick. I'd be shocked. Yep. If they didn't, just because of the cap space, the lack of cap space that the team has. So I think second round picks this year and in years to come are going to be really important. So I think that'll kind of be a fun topic to focus on.
Second round guys.
Right. So that'll be fun to dive into.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for that, Jack. I'll see you, I'm sure, soon on a pod. I've got a special guest next week, but after that, I'm sure I'll get you or Kyle back in. And yeah, thanks again for coming on, and everyone else. Like, rate, subscribe, go follow Jack on Twitter. It'll be in the description of the podcast, or, you know, I'll tweet out the link to the pod as well. You can find Jack on Twitter there. He does really great work. Go read his stuff over at Kane of Supers 2. Obviously, always great, like all the stuff over there is. And yeah, I'll see all of you guys next week. Thanks, Jack.
Yeah, be well, man.